Well, greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy. I am net control operator for the Limar technical net. This is one of many technical nets we have done, and before us, Dick, K2RIW, has been doing them since 1982, and there are archived copies of some of Dick's technical nets going back as far as 2006. So from 2006 on, you can actually listen to old archives of the technical net, Mike KC2NJI, over at amateurradio.tv offers all those archives, and please take a look at them and listen to them. They're fascinating. As always, I like to mention that if you have any mailbag questions for the technical net and you can't get on through the radio, we have no mailbag questions tonight, unfortunately, but if you have them, or if you have any topics that you want discussed, or if you want any science topics discussed, or refute something that I might have said, as long as you supply good references and resources to check those things out. And, if you want me to pass on a message to Paul, WS2N, for the space report, the email address that you can reach me at is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. And there will be links to any story that I tell you about later on tonight, if we have the time. That will be on my link page, roy.ac2gs.com. We'll have links to those articles. There is a chat room that is available if you're interested in chat rooms. You can just type in your browser, chat.ac2gs.com, and that will bring you to our chat room. Also, for anyone that doesn't have a radio in the area or can't access EchoLink or for some other reason can't listen to the audio stream, we supply an internet-based audio stream of the technical net. You point your browser at technet.ac2gs.com, and that will let you listen in. Won't let you participate, unfortunately, but at least lets you listen in. So let me drop for a second, and then I will ask if anyone has any questions of a technical nature tonight for the technical net. Okay, very well. This is, again, AC2GS. My name is Roy. And does anyone have any questions of a technical nature, any topics they want to discuss, comments they want to make? Please give us your first name and your call sign.
8202B for comment.
Okay, Craig, you're on the list. Anyone else? Very well. We'll hear Craig's comment tonight, and hopefully there will be other people with questions as the night progresses. Craig, what did you want to say today?
I will say the technical net has been going strong for these past few weeks without Dick. Again, still very sad about him, but hey, it's all about life. But hoping the TechNet can continue, and it would be nice to rewind beyond 2006 into the past to hear what it was like back then, but don't really have the technology to do that. But hey, as time goes on, more and more great things will come. That's all I got for now. Back to net control, KD2OGB.
KD2OGB, check in.
Yes, Fred, you have a question or a comment, or are you just checking in?
Just checking in for all time sake.
Okay, Fred, it's just in past memory you used to check in with a question, and then when Dick finally was able to take your question, you were gone. So I was just wondering if you might have a question tonight, because it seems to be a light night anyway.
Yes, Roger, I'll take one.
Okay, Fred, very well. Craig, thank you a lot for your kind words. I'm trying the best that I can. I kind of somehow found myself in this position, and I'm trying to make the best that we can of it. I, too, will miss Dick greatly. I forgot to mention that this coming Friday night, May 29th, we're going to have a little something I call a radio wake. I did it about 3 years ago when John, KC2WGB, passed on. And it was an interesting experience. We went from about 9 p.m. on a Friday night to about 5:30. My memory and my brain function kind of froze up around that time, so we kind of called it a day or a night or whatever. So once again, this May 29th, this Friday night at 9 p.m., we'll have a little get-together in which we will not mourn the loss of a great man. We will rejoice at a well-lived life that he had and the memories that we have of him, of the answers to questions we asked him and the lessons we learned from him and the experiences he provided us. So I'm looking forward to it, and I hope most of the people listening tonight will set aside Friday night to join me in that. But once again, thank you very much, Greg. I hope to do it justice. I wish we did have archives that go back before 2006. Unfortunately, we have to be happy with the fact that that Mike KC2NJY started to record these things and put it up in his website. So we at least have 14 years worth of memories and information from the technical net. So thank you very much, Craig. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the technical net. Does anyone have any technical questions tonight or any topics they'd like discussed?
KB2DXC.
Yes, DXC. What's your first name, please?
Yeah, well, my name is Phil. That's Papa Hotel in Dia Lima. And I was going to call sign is KB2DXC. And I do have a question. Back to you.
Okay, Phil, let her rip.
Okay, I'm not sure if the question has ever been addressed before. Probably has. I'm sure it's quite common. In doing research, I'm picking up a new handheld, new HT for whatever band, preferably a tri-band. But yeah, you run into the different means by which they produce digital voice. You know, there's DMR, C4FM, and who knows whatever else is out there. And so I have some questions in regard to, well, for this area, at least Tri-State, what is a prevalent scheme of doing the digital voice? And the other thing is, am I missing anything by not having a handheld that does digital voice? Back to you.
Okay, Phil. The digital voice is a good topic. It's something that people are interested in and that's relatively new, as you mentioned. There's primarily three major digital voice modes that are utilized by amateur radios in this country. The first one pretty much was D-Star. That was designed by the Japanese Amateur Radio Club and was taken on by ICOM, and many of their ICOM radios were operational with D-Star, and they use a network that they call reflectors. So you'll have reflector 30 alpha or... The second one that kind of came among us was DMR, which was originally Motorola's commercial digital voice mode, and so it wasn't really designed to be terribly user-friendly. It was sort of designed for the commercial applications where you'd actually hire someone for $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year to make sense of it. So there's a lot of metaphors that are kind of difficult for people to get around, and very often people will make it easier for other people by sharing code plugs. I just shared my code plug just today, and I have a few times in the last week or two, and it's what you do with DMR. The third and the youngest of the three is what you call C4FM, what other people call Yaesu Fusion Digital Technology. It's the most user-friendly in that when you boot up the radio, all it does is ask you for your call sign. It doesn't authenticate. None of the actual digital modes, although requiring identifiers, all of them don't authenticate them. So, unfortunately, people can copy other people's identifiers. So it boots up, it asks you for your call sign, and you're good to go. Let me drop for a second. I don't want to time out. Okay, whereas D-Star uses reflectors as the name for nodes on the network, DMR uses talk groups, but they serve the same purpose, and Fusion uses the concept of rooms. Fusion has a lockdown server in Japan that they call WiresX, and you can access it through the control pad of a Fusion radio and get into the different rooms that are similar to talk groups and reflectors. Are you missing anything by not having that? Well, this sort of depends on what you like and what you don't like. If you don't mind communicating somewhat via the Internet, it's a fun experience. It extends and expands your ability to talk to different people at different times. And it's a somewhat more consistent manner of doing it, since most of it is not RF-based, but through the Internet. So for those people, it's loads of fun. You get to do more things with more different people. Other people kind of have a checklist of what's amateur radio and what isn't, and a lot of times they'll check it for not being amateur radio. For them, that's fine. You know, you do what you want to do. The whole idea of this hobby is to have as much fun as humanly possible. So does that answer the question, Phil? Or if not, please continue asking.
AC2GS, KV2DX. Yeah, I'm missing a little bit of something here, which I think I pretty much know that. I think I know the answer, but I am reminded that Dick Nadel always said that there's, you know, 28 or more different types of amateur radio, and, you know, everybody picks their little niche or whatever. You mentioned Internet. I know there's, you know, the ability to go through nodes and repeaters that are computer connected, but based on just a radio to radio, as far as, you know, digital to digital, analog to analog, is there much use of that? And that is not using the Internet, but just strictly repeaters or simplex?
Okay, I mean, to me, one of the major benefits is the ability to kind of painlessly jump into Internet-based nodes. You know, IRLP sort of does that, but it's a wee bit of a kludge. But if you just look at it as a repeater or a simplex operation, again, depending upon who you talk to, some people will tell you that they're able to reach farther using the digital modes than the analog modes, that there's a lot less breakdown of the signal until the packet loss gets so extreme that it just ends up being gibberish. On the other side, you'll have people who tell you that the somewhat robotic voice, because it's not an analog reproduction of your voice, what's going on, because the bit stream would have to be too massive and the bandwidth too wide, they narrow the bandwidth by using compression algorithms, and they extract the actual phonemes in your speech. So it's basically they take it apart and then they put it back together. Some people don't even recognize that artifact. Some people don't mind that artifact. Other people, it drives them crazy. So each of the digital modes have a slightly different quality to their voices. It's more of a difference between D-Star and a Fusion and DMR, because the actual voice encoder decoder is a different generation altogether. So the qualities are somewhat different. Again, some people don't mind it, some people prefer it. So you'll find both camps around. I think it's an interesting technology. I don't think it's kind of gotten to the end point. I think that it needs a couple of extra things that no one's come up with yet. You know, it's sort of like what tablets were like before Apple got into the business, where you could see that it's a real useful thing, but it didn't seem to have everything it should have.
Well, on the question of interoperability, can C4 radios talk to DMR radios and vice versa? Or does that have to apply at all?
You would think that because DMR and Fusion use the same voice encoder decoder, that they possibly could, but they can't at all. because unfortunately they've packaged it and modulated it into a slightly different, they all use some slight variation of phase key signaling to get the bit stream there, but they're ever so different so that they're not compatible at all. What people do to make them somewhat compatible, because there's no company that's packing them all together in a single transceiver, handy-talkie, or mobile, or what have you. There's always the story that someone's working on it, but it never comes to fruition. The closest we have available that works sort of like that, again, I hate to go back to the same point, but hotspots. Hotspots are ways to connect a handy-talkie or a mobile into the internet, and through the internet can communicate with the different nodes. But that's the only level of interoperability that you can find right now. Someday they might invent a wonderful handy talkie or mobile that can do both DMR, D-Star, and Fusion, but I wouldn't hold my breath for it.
Just waiting for a little pixie dust or something like that.
Okay.
Well, just to establish one thing now, is digital voice required so that you may use the nodes for which you want to go through on, I guess, repeaters that are intended for this purpose?
Unfortunately, yes, they are, because at the end point, they're always going to go through another voice encoder decoder. If you supplied it with an analog voice signal, it would probably go crazy. So unfortunately, although you have options, depending upon what kind of a hotspot and how capable you are of configuring it, you can go from a D-Star to a DMR node or a DMR to a D-Star node. You can't go from analog. Now, there are radios out there that will do cross-banding between analog and digital, but that's I would assume, a completely different question.
Yeah, most certainly beyond my knowledge of that. Okay. So, I really don't need to put a priority on the, you know, digital voice radio at this point in time, because I'm not really participating at all in any, you know, digital repeaters or internet-linked repeaters, you know, whatever the different nomenclatures are for that. But once again, I start seeing radios, okay, auto-detect digital, and then we go to auto-detect analog, and I just thought, you know, anybody who has a digital repeater has that feature. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, in repeaters, there's something that happens in fusion repeaters that doesn't happen in D-Star or DMR repeaters. Fusion repeaters have this interesting option to set the repeater to detect whether it's a digital signal or an analog signal, and then pass it as either analog or digital. I don't know if a lot of people kind of use that feature because it confuses some people, and when they're used to operating analog and they then hear digital and it sounds like noise, they get very annoyed and they take that frequency off their scanner list. But that's the closest you'll get to that. There are receivers. AOR makes a receiver that's rather expensive. They have a handy talkie looking one, although it doesn't transmit, and they have something that looks more like a mobile radio. They sell it for about $800-$900, sometimes $1,000, and that's able to actually detect and translate the different digital modes purely on a receiving basis. They cannot transmit on any frequency. But to my knowledge, there is no other type of, with DMR and D-Star, if you send it an analog signal, it doesn't know what to do with it. Since it doesn't have the proper protocol packets in it, it rejects it.
AC2PS, KB2DXC. So what, in your experience, is prevalent out here in the Long Island tri-state area in regards to what are people using the C4 FM, EMR, and repeaters? If there's many, if any, digital repeaters going on. I know that usage can definitely vary from region to region. Back to you, sir.
AC2GS. Yeah, the different regions have different favorites. Way back, about 8 years ago, you would probably be able to find at least two or three D-Star repeaters in the area. As time has gone on, time has not been kind to D-Star, at least in this area. I think there might be one station that I can get that's D-Star. Over the last 5 or 6 years, DMR has really kind of taken off as a digital mode. I think there were a lot of commercial Motorola repeaters that became available and was snapped up. Limark owns a DMR repeater and operates the DMR talk group. So I would say DMR is kind of the most popular. Now, you're not going to see that on VHF because these things usually spend more time on UHF. But if you go to the UHF bands, and I have radios that have pan adapters so I can get a sense of what's going on the band, you'll find four or five or six different stations that seem to transmit the same type of a signal simultaneously. And what's going on with them is they happen, DMRs usually have two channels. They're called time slots because they slice up time in 30 millisecond pieces so that they can have time slot one and time slot two. One of the time slots usually is for local repeater access so it doesn't collide with people who want to talk on networks or talk groups. The other is the talk group part, and they seem to belong to the same general group of talk groups. There are, you know, America, there's English, there's TAC 310, there's TAC 311, and so there seems to be, if there's not activity in one, there's activity in another, and you see a lot of repeater function going on the repeaters, not really originating that much, but repeating it from elsewhere. So they look very lively, and they do exist, and you can access them. As time has gone on and hotspots have kind of grown popular, I think they've narrowed the talk groups that they will accept over time. So unless you know the guy who's running it or you can find a website with a list of his talk groups, you're never quite sure what talk group he's allowed his controllers to have access to, other than by simply requesting that talk group electronically and seeing if it goes through. I hope that answers the question.
Yes, it does. And all these answers will most certainly save me time, because I'm probably not going to really delve too much into looking at the digital voice radios, but I really don't have, you know, I guess I can't do the justify expense versus use, especially in this particular area, so, yeah, that definitely changes my mind. But I'm also somewhat fascinated about how the internet linking between all those systems work, and I guess one day I'll probably pick up a book and learn about it.
Yes, Phil, it's fascinating. They all work a little bit different, just enough to give programmers severe headaches. I will, though, give you a little tip on a way of kind of sticking your big toe in the water without basically paying anything. I'm assuming that you have a cell phone. If it's Android, there is an application that goes by the name of Peanut. You go to Google Store and you look up Peanut. It's free. It's a gentleman somewhere in Europe who operates a farm of server and gateways to a lot of these digital nodes. And all you have to do is prove to him that you're a licensed amateur radio operator, and he gives you access to at least, last time I looked, the 30 or 40 different gateways, rooms, or talking groups. So you can kind of get a little bit of a sense what digital is like without paying a dime.
52 Bravo Zulu.
Yes, Rich.
Also have to register with DMR and D-Star to use Peanuts, besides registering with that guy who wrote Peanuts.
Well, with D-Star, D-Star, it's confusing in that D-Star requires you, if you're going to access the actual repeaters, if you go through just the reflectors and the other guy at the other end is on another node, you know, a hotspot, then you don't. What would stop people is that if you get to a reflector, get to a repeater that someone's listening up through RF, you have to be registered with D-Star, and they share the registry amongst themselves. So if you want to be able to transmit on a D-Star repeater, you have to contact the local D-Star repeater and have your call sign inserted in the general list of accepted call signs. For DMR, I think it just shows an error in your identity because if you use a hotspot, it would show an error in your identity because it tags your identity using a DMR identifier. You can go on Radio ID and get a DMR identifier, again, for free. It takes 5 entire minutes. And it's probably a good thing to do nevertheless. But I think with Peanut, it's not that important as far as the DMR is concerned. It may flash some kind of ID error. I don't know exactly how he has it configured if it requires you to put a DMR. I don't remember putting a DMR on the Peanut application, but it's been a while, so maybe I'm wrong there.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Andy, W-A-2-C-E-L, he told me about that, and I tried it. It was good. And no, I didn't get involved with putting anything in except, it had nothing to do with putting in a DMR, any information about that. It was fun. Back to you.
Yeah, it's an interesting application. Unfortunately, the man who spent the time and effort and does it for free, which is very nice, has a kind of problem with Apple products, so he decided not to port it to iPhones. You can, though, use it on a PC computer, but if you have a cell phone that's Android, it's just a download, a request to him for access, and you're in like Flint. It will cause a problem, though, as Richard mentioned earlier, in that sometimes people will get into a conversation on a reflector with a guy who's on the other side of an actual RF repeater. And in those cases, not having a licensed call sign for that repeater might cause problems in having a conversation under those circumstances. But if you keep them through hotspots and internally, you won't notice that at all.
Well, are there any sites online which I can just monitor digital activity?
Yes, there is. They're kind of buggy. If you do a search for the word Brandmeister, Brandmeister, I believe, they'll give you pages and pages of things. You can look up the different Brandmeister is kind of runs parallel to DMR talk groups. They're not identical, but they're a bridge between the server chain that operates the main DMR talk groups and a separate third party, which is what Brandmeister is. They give access over the internet. It's a bit spotty. It's not the greatest audio quality, but you know they'll have a long list of their talk groups, and they'll have an option on the other side. Click this to listen. And sometimes it doesn't work, but sometimes it does. So that's an option as well.
62 Bravo Zulu.
Yes, Rich.
There's also the expense involved, because as you know, Roy, I've been heavily investigating this myself, and the creme de la creme of open spots, and you can't buy the old version. The way they upgrade their versions is to come out with a whole new one. So if you have the older version, the only way you can get the newer version is buy a whole new open spot. Those are $300. and the radios, a Midland radio, I would say is around $200. So to get into it, basically, you're looking, there are less expensive open spots, I mean, hot spots, that run about $110 or whatever, but you're still looking $300-$400 to get into digital radio.
Yeah, I agree totally with you, Rich, and I was talking to Phil about options where it wouldn't cost them anything, doing a web search for Brandmeister and clicking Listen Now, or downloading the Peanut application and running it. Using that, he can even transmit, because that lets you do it two ways. Brandmeister, unfortunately, only lets you listen, so it's a one-way type of operation. But, you know, if he likes what he hears and wants to go further on into it, theoretically, a hotspot can be add a multi-layer functionality to a digital mode, mobile or handy talkie radio. And we've talked about OpenSpot before. It's not that they've orphaned the OpenSpot 2 in favor of the OpenSpot 3, because they still offer software upgrades and updates. And if they find any bugs, they continue to fix it and upload it to people who already have bought the OpenSpot 2. But when they have a new model, it's functionally a new piece of hardware. It's not software. In the case of OpenSpot 2 and then OpenSpot 3, they decided to build in an internal lithium battery, so you didn't have to supply external power, and also combined it with a dual vocoder, voice encoder, decoder chip, so that it can make the transition between D-Star and DMR. Otherwise, you couldn't do it because they use different vocoder chips. So those are nice hardware features, but you can't cram them into a software update. So I can sort of understand why, you know, that's the way it is. I'm sort of surprised that they're not selling both OpenSpot 2s and 3s, but they're in short supply for the 3s as it is, so maybe it's a supply issue. I don't know.
KG2RY.
Yes, David.
What are your thoughts about duplex hotspots? Duplex hotspots and DMR. To be able to put the busiest channel in time slot 1 and then have all your other talk groups on time slot 2. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, as far as I'm aware, you can't really put more than one talk group per hotspot. You can use Brandmeister if your talk groups are all Brandmeister-based. They will allow you to supply them with a list of static talk groups, and they'll act almost like scanning through them. But that's Brandmeister and only Brandmeister. All the other options like XLX and YSF and other gateways don't really offer that as far as I'm aware. Dual hotspots are nice. They tend to be more expensive, obviously, than single. They are probably a little bit more complicated than single. I opted to have two separate OpenSpot 2s. I find that easier on my brain, again, because I happen to like OpenSpot. They have a proprietary hardware and software, but they do it very well. It boots up within seconds. There's no corruption of the SD card, as there sometimes is, unfortunately, with Raspberry Pi-based Pi-Star devices. But, you know, as a concept, it's very good.
QSL. Yeah, I'm using Brandmeister. Yeah, I have one static talk group in time slot 1 and one static talk group in time slot 2. But the one in time slot 2 isn't as busy as the one in time slot 1. You know, a lot of times, like if you're listening to talk group 91 worldwide, you know, there's a lot of activity there, and it's hard to find, you know, to be able to access other talk groups in that time slot. So it's good to have the second time slot that, you know, say, talk group 91 is in time slot 1 and all the rest of them are time slot 2.
Yeah, David, I agree with you, David. If that kind of arrangement works good for you, then that's fine. What I do is I have two open spots. They're set to different frequencies, and I just can select on the top of my handy talkie between open spot 2A and open spot 2B and accomplish pretty much the same thing. But, you know, there's more than one road that leads to Rome.
There's one little thing, though, that makes this work, you know, whether we're doing it your way or my way, and that is a 3.2-inch Nexatron screen, so you can see who's calling, you know, and you can see what talk group they're in, and you can see what their name is and their country, where they're from. Mike, back to you.
Yes, I agree with you. That's a nice feature. I have an MD380 and I have an Anytone D878, and both of the displays do the exact same thing for me, so it serves my purpose. I'm usually closer to the handy talkie that's operating than I am to the hotspot.
QSL. I use just the 878, and let's say talk group 91 is very busy, and my 878 is on talk group 91. Then, of course, I could see, you know, the person calling all the information. But also on the Nexatron screen in time slot 2, I can see, you know, somebody's calling on the other static channel, and I can switch over to it, and I don't get stuck, you know.
Okay, I think what you're alluding to about getting stuck is in some functions of Handy Talkie, when it's actively receiving a signal, it kind of locks up controls and such. I haven't had that problem because the control that I use to simply shift between two different frequencies isn't locked down on any tone radios when they're receiving a digital signal. So I don't really have that particular problem. And you know, I guess possibly if you happen to have the hotspot near you, it's nice to know what the other channel is doing. Again, I don't. I have it placed off to the side, and if I need to kind of look into what's going on in the hotspot, I call up a web browser and see what's going on through a computer or an iPad or any other computerized device. So I understand and appreciate that it works for you, and that's great. You know, my configuration pretty much works for me.
W2BZ. W2BZ, just hold on a second. I'm almost done. I just want to say that, you know, if 91 is busy, I just go to slot 2 and call any other DMR time talk group. If talk group 91 is busy, I just go to time slot 2 to call any other talk group that's programmed into the HT. Mike, back to you, KG2RY.
Okay, David, again, with my 878, I can turn a little dial and go down a laundry list of both of my open spots, and if I select a channel, it will it will use a contact list that forces it to make a connection with different talk groups. So functionally, does pretty much the same. But again, if what you do works for you best, then that is great. You know, I'm not saying no. Rich, you wanted to say something?
Yes, just in my opinion, getting into this without a hotspot, in other words, just with a radio, is not very convenient. Let me put it that way. I'm out in Riverhead, but Roy's in the middle of a lot of repeaters, and he still uses hotspots. And maybe, Roy, you can explain about bugging other people who own repeaters and using their repeaters without, you know, without using a hotspot.
Sure, Rich. By the way, AC2GS. As I was telling Rich more than once, the problem with accessing either rooms or talk groups or reflectors is that you're engaging a person's repeater as a kind of monopoly for the time being, unless everyone is thrilled with that particular reflector room or talk group. So eventually, unless you pick an incredibly popular one, the net control operator for the repeater is going to tap you on the shoulder through email and say, stop doing that. Especially in the last few years when hotspots became increasingly popular, a lot of people who got tired of hearing that complaint go directly through hotspots, and that way you get around the whole thing of repeaters themselves. Again, people who want to be an amateur radio operator that operates on RF, that's one more section removed from what some people consider amateur radio, but it frees up the guy's repeater. In the case of D-Star and Fusion, there's only one channel. So if you go on to either a reflector or a talk group, everyone goes on. It's a little bit better, but not much, with the DMR because of the time slot. One time slot is usually local, and it's locked down. You can't get out from there. So people who want to stay local can enjoy that to their heart's content. But that would require you to use the other time slot to access the network and go to the talk group. So you haven't used up 100% of the repeater, just 50% of the repeater. But that's one of the reasons. And because of that, people who operate repeaters have tended to lock them down more and more and more as more people just utilize hotspots. Any other comments, questions, answers, statements, or what have you on this subject, please?
RG with a comment, with a question, I guess.
Okay, what's your question?
I got a Yaesu FT991 Alpha, uses the Wires X. I'm fairly new to this, the whole digital scheme. What's the deal with that? I mean, I've used it so far, you know, quite a few times and talked to guys all over. Is it very similar to the DMR and the other modes out there? Because I know it's on C4FM, and that's about as far as I know about it.
Yeah, they're all inherently very similar, but there's enough differences in each of them to make them non-compatible. Now, this might be accidental on the part of the manufacturers, but most likely it isn't. They all use a different variation on phase shift keying, to supply basically digital signals, and then they use one of two different voice encoder decoders. They're both by the same manufacturer. The D-Star is a little older, and the DMR and the Fusion is a little newer. They compress the audio stream to phonemes, and then they compress the digital data as much as they can, and they pump it through the phase shift keying algorithm. But they're all different, and they all actually have packets, the same way that Internet Protocol has binary packets. All three of these supply the bit streams in packets that contain an identifier and all kinds of extra stuff, and all three of them use different protocols for the packets and such. So the technology is very similar, but they're all completely incompatible. As far as Fusion, it's very nice. It's one of the newest ones. If you find a repeater that opens their Wires X to all the rooms, then you have a gateway to everywhere. But as time has gone on, I've noticed at least that the Wires X rooms and many repeaters have been locked down to their one room. So far you've been lucky in that you've gone to Fusion repeaters that have open Wire X. Otherwise, you have to find some other way to access the Wires X room.
Right, that's outstanding. Yeah, that's because I found like two repeaters that I've been using for the Wires X, and it seems to have I've had a plethora of rooms to use, and I've had QSOs, you know, all around the world, which has been really nice. But like I said, it's only the two that I have right now, and they both run, you know, off the 70 centimeter. I haven't been able to find any on 2 meter or anything else like that. So, but your information has been greatly appreciated, because I was wondering if there was any type of compatibility issue
And obviously, I thought there was, and you answered my questions perfectly.
Well, thank you very much. I don't know where you're located. If you can get signals from Brooklyn, my other club, the Kings County Radio Club, has a Fusion repeater. Its WiresX room, unfortunately, is not open. It only connects to the KC2RC room. But if you're interested, it's 146.730.
Roger that, 146.730. I appreciate that.
KC2RSQ?
Yes. RSQ, I believe. If you could say your call sign one more time.
KB2RSQ, his name here is Pete. I have a question.
Sure. Sure, Pete. Ask away.
I've got a Yaesu handy talk here that's, Fusion enabled. The digital mode. So would you direct me to a website or two where I might meet up on this and get more intelligent on the subject?
Any particular aspect of Fusion that you're curious about, or just generally?
Just generally. Honestly, the only thing I know about it is, it's the Yaesu protocol and it's digital. That's as far as my knowledge goes.
YouTube is your answer.
Well, Rich, in a way I agree. YouTube can be very helpful. As I kind of always say, Google is your friend. If you just Google C4FM, Fusion, digital technology, you'll get reams and reams and reams and reams of information. They'll discuss what C4FM really means. They'll even show you the protocol for the digital headers of the packets that are transmitted. So depending upon which site you read, you'll either get a very superficial indication of what's going on, or some of them you'll get an incredibly technical and precise and very long-winded one. As Rich mentioned, YouTube is full of people trying to explain it, so that's good too. The information density I found for things like this is a little bit better on web pages than on video, because a lot of video is taken up with other things, intros, special effects, patting themselves on the back for what a great job they're doing, and then sometimes they actually get around to explaining stuff. So if you're a YouTube type of person, then YouTube's a good place to look, but I would just Google it. And there's endless stuff. I mean, I looked that up. I used to do that with everything, with the D-Star and with DMR and with Fusion. I've even written articles that I'm sure is on in Limark's archives of their newsletters on the subject.
All right, fair enough. Thank you. The YouTube stuff, I agree with you. There's too much fluff. It's wasted, 90% of time with the intros and pass on the back and so forth. But I can Google for sure. I was just wondering whether you had any particular recommendations on a specific website or two where, I'm looking for something probably more than just a superficial introduction. I understand computer and network technology, so I can probably deal with it here.
Yeah, I mean, offhand, I don't have a ready list of that type of stuff, but I would Google, the keywords that I mentioned, and then, just take a quick look at the page, and you can pretty much see in about a tenth of a second whether that's the level of information you were looking for or not. And, that's sort of what I do. I tell people that, Google is their friend, and also that you need a good BS meter, because sometimes you'll land on a page that just doesn't quite sound right. So both of those things are paired together with this wonderful little computer revolution we have in the Internet makes digging up information incredibly simpler than it used to be in the old days.
All right. Well, so thank you for letting me break in. I'll be continuing to
prepare. WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
There's somebody on the chat net that would like to know about the online streaming available for this repeater. Do you have that set up tonight, or Is that working?
I hope so. It looks like it's working. It's again, you have to type into your browser technet.alphacharlie2golfsierra.ac2gs.com, and then it should pop up.
4, 8.
Yeah, I already have three people who are listening to the stream, so most likely it's operational. If it wasn't working, you know, I would assume they would check in and be annoyed and then check out. So there's three people listening. So again, all you have to do is go to technet.ac2gs.com, and it's a nice live stream.
I'll let them know, boys. Very good.
Okay, anyone else with any questions on this particular subject? And then I will ask for any other questions. But anything about this, you know, if we need to wrap it up with a bow.
Star KG2RY?
Yes, David.
You know, I think it's a good idea to have two hotspots. I don't think I'm able to afford two hotspots, so I opted for some inexpensive Chinese duplex hotspot that was, how to say, it had like a case around it. It was ready to plug and play. It was pretty easy to set up, and it works pretty good for what it is, I guess. Really, you know, it's like having two hotspots. But thanks for the idea about having two hotspots. Mike, back to you.
Well, you're welcome, David. And I understand, you know, different people have different solutions to different problems and different price points that they, you know, that make sense to them and not others. I kind of like PriStar as a concept, and I think it's done great things for the hobby. I'm a little bit concerned by the endless stories I hear of corrupted SD cards. I think that's an inherent problem in Raspberry Pi, that occasionally it will fire off reading to the SD card and mess things up. I can barely recall that many people who haven't told me that at one point they had to go back and reflash their SD card because of that. Some people, flashing an SD card is second nature. It doesn't even upset them in the slightest. Other people, they don't know what to do with it. And most people are someplace in the middle. So, you know, I'm glad that your setup is working for you. I'm glad my setup is working for me. And, you know, it's just the options are available to anyone on the outside world. Some people don't need two hotspots. They can get by perfectly fine with one. But I thought it would be really nifty to be able to kind of switch back and forth between the two. And, you know, for me, it's working.
Well, you can buy an SD card and put software on it, take one out, put the other one in. Doesn't seem to be that complicated.
Well, to you and to me, no. But you also have to understand that there's a very wide range of people now using these things. I regularly hear on my hotspot first-time conversations and gentlemen who are in their late 70s, their mid-80s, and their son or their grandson brought them a hotspot and programmed it for them, and they don't even want to use computers for email. So, you know, some people, again, as I said before, it's second nature to reflash an SD card. Other people really don't know it, don't care to know it. They don't have slots that can access directly an SD card. They don't have an adapter for it, and they don't want one. So, you know, it takes all kinds.
Yeah, I was looking on eBay for a duplex hotspot, found one for like 130, so that's pretty good, and 43 for the monitor. If the radio is off, I can still see if there's activity going on. So even before I start, you know, I could have an idea of what's happening there. I tried to use it for D-Star a number of times. It worked, and then all of a sudden it doesn't work. so I got to figure out what's going on. Some little odd thing is probably not in the right place.
Yes, unfortunately, these things can be very finicky, and it's good to kind of have a little experience using them, because that always pays off. But, there are other variations of hotspots as well. In addition to your dual hotspot, there are other hotspots. Most hotspots are usually monobanders, and almost always those monobands are the 70-centimeter band, the UHF. But there are companies that make dual-banded hotspots so that you can operate your handy talkie through a VHF band rather than a UHF band. So there are a much less number of brands that do that, and one of the major ones that I was aware of is back-ordered like many other things. But they do exist. So there's variations on the theme, and you know, different versions suit different people.
Well, you know, if something isn't working, occasionally things don't work. Or if the internet is intermittent, you know, it's having problems. And I guess there's always Peanut, you know, you can always tune in on Peanut. Go ahead.
Yes, it's a very nice application, and you can't complain about the cost, which is nothing. And I commend the gentleman. Unfortunately, I don't remember his name offhand, but I see him when I'm checking my gateway status on places, because his Peanut servers access the same gateways that I do often, so I'll see his call sign show up on those web pages. It's a great service that he gives for amateur radio operators. And, you know, the only exception, unfortunately, is that people who have iPhones can't avail themselves of it. But for all the people with Android out there, or if you don't have Android and you can operate it on your PC, it's available. It's a subset of the Reflector Talk Group rooms. It's, you know, maybe 2-3% of what's available. But he's chosen pretty much some of the most popular groups, so it's a very nice service that he gives people free of charge. That's very nice of him. It's a comment upon amateur radio as a hobby and the type of people who are involved in it and the generosity that they demonstrate.
Thanks, Roy. I'll definitely download it on my Windows computer.
Okay, very good, David. You know, like I said, I've used it. It's a little funky at times. It's not obvious what's going on. There are two kind of branch points where there's a whole list of reflectors and talk groups. If you use, I think, US, and another if you use General or something. I don't recall the specifics, but it's a great thing for what it is. So please test it out, try it out, play with it. Like I said, it's for free, so the only thing it costs you is your time.
Thank you very much, Roy.
You're welcome, David. Any other questions related to this topic, please let me know.
N2HVR.
Yes, Nick. Yes, Nick, I see you on the Echo link. What's your question or comment?
Well, one thing I wanted to put out there is KB2NZU, which is in Brooklyn. It's like 5 miles west of my location. And that's a great source if you, that guy was talking about his 991A, which I also have. If you go to his thing, you can get on American Link with no problem at all. And that room is opened up to everywhere. KB2NZU, 147195. The other question, when we were speaking this morning, as a matter of fact, I made about 5 satellite contacts after I spoke to you on the 11 a.m. net. It was great. It was really good. It was the satellites came in really good. Thing is, you mentioned you had a DMR mobile. Now, I have a TYT 380 at any time.